Welcome to the Inside Slant Podcast, brought to you by JayhawkSlant.com, bringing you the latest in KU recruiting news, team coverage, and all of the information you need. Here is the staff from Jayhawk Slant.
Everybody, welcome back to the Inside Slant Podcast. It's been way too long, and we are damn glad to be back at it. We're going to get into some basketball talk and then a lot of Kansas football. But before that, allow me to reintroduce myself. I'm your host, Randy Withers, fresh off my 15-year slant anniversary. I looked at that this morning, but somehow my profile still says I'm just a sophomore. But that's okay. With me today, as always, is Jayhawk Slant publisher John Kirby and basketball insider Shay Wildebor. Shay, how's August been treating you, man?
It's been good, man. You know, Kemper started school, and you know, I know how Kirby feels about that. I'm ready to get the kids out of here, but it's been good, man. It was a good summer. I just got some good news last night after football. Coach came up to me and said, "Kemper is my starting left guard." So anytime your kid gets a spot at the table, a starting spot at the table, it's good. School this week was great. You know, Kemper is now, and I know Kirby knows about this too, introduced him to the cell phone world, and that's nice. Knowing that he can pick up the phone and call me or text me, and I can get to where I need to be and not worrying about it. So, man, it's good. Life is good. Good August, and I'm ready to get back into this grind here and get going.
That's awesome. That's awesome. As a former middle school and high school left guard, I have to say, you know, good for your son. It's a good spot. Good place to play.
He loves it, man. He's ready to get this Olathe West Owls sixth grade team up and going, man. He's kind of like me, except I anticipate more playing time. I was always that boisterous, excited guy. Thankfully, Kemper's got my size and his mom's height. So, you know, I think deep down inside, selfishly, as a dad, I want him to play and want him to do well. But, you know, he's out working hard. He's having fun, and I love him. And I'm just glad to be able to kind of sit back and watch this progress and just take it all in, man, one day at a time. Because I know I'm going to wake up one day and it's going to be over. So, you know, it's been a good August. It was a good summer. I hate to see it go, but, you know, I guess life could be worse.
That's awesome. That's really awesome. Kirby, I know the boys have kept you busy this summer. How's it been?
Well, I'm glad school started last week. Get those boys back into school and a routine. Although I will say, my oldest has been getting up and, you know, hitting the 6 a.m. football workouts all summer long and then going to baseball and baseball every weekend. So I'll tell you, the kids go through a lot. But, you know, they aren't as lucky as Kemper. They didn't all get Samsung S9s. I saw that on the Facebook. Shay opened up the pocketbook for the boy on his first phone.
No. Listen, I've been with Sprint for 20 years, so I can promise you that I got a really good deal or he'd be having a flip phone. I can promise you boys that. 20 years of Sprint, they finally did me right one time.
Don't knock the flip phone. The flip phone is hot. Flip phone is starting to come back with all the retro tech and everything. That's one of the things my wife keeps telling me. She's like, "Hey, I'm going to get you a flip phone when they come back out." And I'm like, "Whatever. I still have my old ones in the box. Why do I need a new one?"
The flip phone and the pager. When the pager comes back, let me know.
Every pager and all I think about is the end of Avengers. I mean, we saw it right there. Captain Marvel is coming, and he did have to dial her up on a pager. So
I need a pager.
Hey, I got to tell you guys this. I was going back through. I've got archives kept of our audio and when we do our podcast. And I want to say one of our first ones we did about, I don't know, it's probably a little later than this time, a couple years ago, we were sitting there talking about our podcast started off with the Royals and, you know, postseason. God, boy, that thing's turned around, hasn't it?
Man.
Brutal. Brutal. I saw they were up last night 3-0 or 4-0 and ended up losing like 9-3 or 9-4. Moose is gone. Hosmer's gone. Everybody's gone. I mean, it's Alex and Salvi and anybody else is Duffy's around still. But I mean, it's like, I guess Alcides is still around. But it's like, it's amazing how fast things can start crumbling down. And really, I mean, a short period of time. It's just, it's bad. Kirby, you're a baseball guy. Who's the next up and coming stud that the Royals are going to get number one overall next year?
Well, you know, Shay, I haven't really paid as much attention to it. You know, it's still far away, but I was with a group of guys not too long ago, and everybody was talking about how they just don't go to the ballpark or they don't even turn the game on. I still have the games on and still watch it. And, you know, I may not pay as close as attention as I did, but I always got it on in the background just following it.
Alan, you know, I think that's the big difference is people just the level of interest has – you can't even say it's fallen. I mean, it's just – it's night and day difference than it was even last summer. Cause even, you know, towards the end of there was a chance at a playoff spot. And this year it's been so bad. You know, this was my first year to go to opening day and that didn't go well. And it kind of set the tone from here on. I mean, I was talking to my grandpa, I think it was earlier this summer, and my grandpa's 92. He's watched a lot of Royals baseball, a lot of bad baseball. And he told me one day, he was like, yep, I was watching and they were up 5-0 in the second or third. They got off to a great start. And he said, and I knew it wasn't safe. And they gave it all back and lost 8-3. And, yep. You know, we talk about the change. Remember how ironclad that bullpen was, and any, you know, a lead of 1-0 was safe. Now there's no lead that's safe.
I haven't watched a game all season long, not one. I mean, I don't know. I just, all the players are gone. HGH is nothing, or whatever it was, is nothing but a memory. And it's just between everything I have going on in life, like you guys, and the how bad they are. It's just, I don't know. It's not something that I've really concerned myself with so far this season. Maybe if they get on a 20-game winning streak, things will change.
Shay, that's a perfect illustration of it, because it went from being must-watch TV, must-see TV for everybody. You know, we had amazing television ratings, to now it's just something that, you know, you might be able to offer somebody free tickets, and they're still going to look at you like, I don't know if I really want to go do that or not. And that's, yeah. I think that tells you right there just how different it really is now.
Yeah, football time's coming up, and then basketball, baby. So it's going to be a long, long couple months for the boys in blue.
All right, well, let's get into this thing. This is going to be a very football-heavy podcast today, so we're going to keep on with Shay. We're going to keep you in the laid-off spot, Shay, because Kirby's going to be hitting cleanup. So let's get right into this. Shay, you were at Bill Self's press conference when they talked about allowing college basketball players to hire agents. What was Coach Self's reaction, and what did you think of it?
You know, the thing with me is, and the agents and all that thing, you know, there's only going to be certain kids that are eligible to do that. And you know, I agree with Self. The only guys that are going to be able to do that are the guys that are considered potential NBA draft prospects. And to me, that's good, because all of a sudden you start getting all these guys that want to do that, and guys that simply aren't ready, guys that see an eye with money, and it ruins the game. And Randy, let me add this too. The thing with the high school situation caught me by surprise too, because once the NBA rule passes that, assuming it does, that high school kids will be eligible to make the jump to the NBA, high school prospects will be allowed to be represented by agents, I believe, beginning on July 1st before their senior year. But the deal is that you have to be, what's the wording here? You have to be viewed or identified as an elite senior prospect.
Wow.
And my thing, yeah, you have to be identified. So if you're a senior and you are a Anthony Davis, Kevin Durant, Derrick Rose, somebody like that, sure. But what if you're kind of on the cusp of one of those guys, and you aren't identified as an elite senior prospect by the by USA Basketball, and you get all, and what's the word I want to use here? I don't want to be, and you get upset, or you know, you don't agree with that decision. Now my thing is, are kids going to start saying, well, hey, if I'm not identified here, I'm going to take my game, instead of going to college for a year, I'm going to take my game here. And to me, that's you know, to me, Randy, the game is special. And especially during the month of March, you know, I think about Bryce Drew's shot. I think about the buzzer beaters. I think about Mario Chalmers. And when guys start deciding to, who aren't identified as elite senior prospects by USA Basketball, decide to start looking elsewhere, to me, that's scary, because the game today is, to me, it's the best game. It's one shot to win it all. No best of five, no best of seven. You got to be at your best on that day. And I know throughout the years, Kansas fans, and as an example, have had a lot of heartbreak. They've, you know, the Paul Pierce-led teams, the Ray Lafrenz-led teams, never made the Final Four. So getting there is something that's special. It's something that takes a lot of hard work. It's something that takes a lot of luck. And I just don't want to see the game watered down. You know, I'm going to be interested to see what happens the guys that are identified as senior as elite prospects, that's great. But I'm interested to see what happens when you're not identified as elite senior prospect and you feel you are an elite senior prospect and you decide maybe that college isn't for you. I just the thing I'm worried about is that you don't want to see the game get watered down. I mean, you want to see the guys that are that need to spend 2 or 3 years in college, you want to see those guys play. So, you know, I'm really just interested to see how it all plays out and what happens.
I agree. I agree with you completely there. Now, let's stay kind of with in similar vein, talking about recruits and recruiting. Let's look at Kansas' 2019 class. How many spots do you expect Bill Self to have, and what are some of the top targets that you've got on the board for the Jayhawks right now?
Well, obviously, they have Marquise Jacobs, committed guard that's been committed for a long time now out of Chicago. Obviously, the two guys at the top of the board are Matthew Hurt Ford from Minnesota, who played with Coach Self at USA Basketball, Jeremiah Robinson Earl, who also played USA Basketball with Coach Self. To me, those are the two biggest guys. Currently, Matthew Hurt, if he's not still on vacation, he'll be returning soon from a family vacation. I think they went on a cruise, and at that time, his father told me that everybody was going to kind of sit down as a family, discuss the ins and outs of the process, kind of maybe formulate a list, cut that list, decide what schools to visit and when, and then go from there. You know what, Randy? I hate to get anybody excited, but I just the way things sit now, obviously Kansas is going to get a visit, barring some last-minute catastrophe. And I love where Kansas stands. Obviously, Matthew and his family were around Coach Self during USA Basketball. They've seen what he's about as far as a coach. You know, they've seen the side outside of basketball, and they've seen the basketball coach. So that's always a good thing. And, you know, same thing with Jeremiah Robinson Earl, who just made the move to IMG Academy in Bradenton, Florida. Came up with a list of five schools: Kansas, North Carolina, Arizona, Notre Dame, Villanova. When all said and done, I expect this to kind of be at least the way I'm looking at it now, a Kansas North Carolina battle. For those that don't know, his dad played for Roy Williams at Kansas, Lester Earl. I know his family is very, very, very pro-Kansas. I know he'll visit. My guess is probably he and Matthew Hurt. Unless they decide to bring him in, you know, during a quiet weekend, we'll be on hand for late night in the fog, just my guess. And the thing with both of those, Randy, is the longer they drag out, the longer they take, I think the more worry there is from the fan base. You know, there's only so much that can happen. You know, the kid's got to take five visits. I think both of them want to have it done before the senior year of basketball starts. I don't see either of these guys dragging out the process. And I think it's realistic that Kansas gets both. I mean, I know North Carolina is really coming on strong for Jeremiah, and I know that they've you know, they put in a lot of time with Matthew Hurt. But let me say this: neither, when it comes to those two guys, nobody's putting as much time as Kansas. I can tell you that. Coach Self and his staff have been on those two guys from the very beginning, and they've done an outstanding job. I think looking at it, I don't know, maybe from a fan perspective or a coach perspective, you would have loved to see Jeremiah Robinson Earl remain at Bishop Miege High School and not make the jump to IMG Academy. That's been done. He's gone for the year. He's not going to be a regular. Still, I think with the work that they put in, they are in an outstanding position. Another guy you want to watch is Samuel Williamson, a small forward from out in Texas. His mom went to Kansas, and I believe his brother just recently graduated from Kansas. Really made a big jump up in the rankings this summer. I don't have it in front of me, but I believe he is ranked number 34. And despite what you read or what you continue to read, Kansas has made this guy a priority. They love him, and again, I would expect him to visit, you know, late night in the fog. Or recently, there's been a situation where, you know, the staff wants to get guys that they really want, key guys in, maybe on a football weekend where they can just spend more time with them. But right now, those are the three guys that I think Kansas fans really want to pay attention to. With Marquise Jacobs already on, that would be, you sign those three, that'd be four guys. And then depending on who decides to leave, who decides to stay next year, you know, I think maybe you can look to add some guys late. But certainly those are the four guys right now that come to mind.
We're going to get much more into the outlook for the men's basketball program in future editions of the Inside Slant podcast, but just give your early kind of abbreviated take on what you see from this year's squad. How good do you think they can be?
You know, I was talking to my dad the other night about this, and I don't want this to sound the wrong way, but I'm seriously considering making my flight to Minnesota now, which is a side of the Final Four. Dude, this team is going to be loaded. I mean, they are stacked. You know, you look at the front court, and I know I'm gonna screw this up because that's what I do. But you've got Lawson's. You know, you've got Udoka Azubuike. You've got David McCormack, and you've got Silvio De Sousa. To me, that front court there, bro, I mean, that is as loaded as a front court as you can get. And then you look in the back court. You've got Devon Dotson. You've got Marcus Garrett. You've got Charlie Moore. You've got Quentin Grimes. You've got who am I missing there? Gerald Vick. You've got Ochai Agbaji. You know, and even in the front court, I missed Mitch Lightfoot. So, I mean, you can go small, and you've got a ton of talented guys, or you can go throw big body. I mean, as a front court, how are you going to handle Udoka Azubuike and David McCormack? Or how are you going to handle the Lawsons and Silvio De Sousa? I love Quentin Grimes. I think he's going to be, you know, at the end of the year, I think he's got to be a chance to be one of the best players in college basketball. Charlie Moore, who's nobody's really talking about, the redshirt from California, originally from Chicago. I mean, he's going to compete for starter-like minutes. Devon Dotson, McDonald's All-American, going to compete for starter-like minutes. You have a guy that hasn't even stepped foot on the court yet that many consider to be the Big 12 preseason favorite for player of the year in Dedrick Lawson. So, I just don't know how you match up with this team. I know Kentucky, they added Reed Travis, which, you know, anytime you get a guy that averages 20 and 10, that's going to boost your roster. But to me, from top to bottom, you know, 1 through 5, you can bring guys off. You have a possibility where you might have some first team type players coming off the bench for Kansas. So they'll be loaded, man. I think this season is going to be exciting. Every year, you know, Bill Self loads up the schedule. This year is no different. And when March comes around, I just, you know, with what they have coming in, what they have coming back, I love the fact that Gerald Vick was able to sit down with coach and iron out any differences they might have had. And he's back. I think anytime you can add a senior leadership, a guy that's been through the wars, a guy obviously that can stretch the court or stretch the floor from behind the arc, you know, I expect big things, no doubt about it.
That's Shea Wildebor, Jayhawk Slant's resident basketball guru and recruiting expert. Shea, thanks for being with us. We'll talk with you again soon.
All right, you guys, take care and have a good day.
All right, now we shift our focus to Kansas football as the Jayhawks are gearing up for year 4 under head coach David Beatty, but maybe more importantly, year 1 under new athletic director Jeff Long. Jayhawks Slant publisher and football insider John Kirby joins us now. And Kirby, there have only been 2 scrimmages as of this morning and about 10 days in pads, but a lot has already been made of the Kansas QB situation and who might be the leader to start the season. Before I get into my first question, I want to play this clip.
This weekend is our second big scrimmage, and we need that scrimmage. We need it. We need one more look at them to be able to kind of have a good idea. That'll give us still 2 weeks. We feel like we're probably going to be good to go after that to make a decision. But once again, I won't do it just to make it. If it just goes off the charts, we got to give ourselves the best chance to win. Our fans deserve the best guy behind center being able to take care of the ball. So this weekend is going to be kind of a telltale force. We're not quite at that point where we're ready to name it yet, but there's been some separation. If I had to make a choice today, I kind of know where I'd go, but these next 3 or 4 days to me are the most important days of camp. A lot of people do well early. A lot of people can string along for 4 or 5 days, but, man, when you get in the dog days, 12, 13, 14 practices, then we get to see who you really are.
Do you think it's a big deal that we haven't heard who the leader or top 2 QBs are for the Jayhawks?
You know, Randy, I really don't. I think that everybody jumps to conclusions when they think that, you know, David Beatty should have named his top 2 or a starter by now. I mean, that's ludicrous. I mean, if you look around the Big 12, I want to say maybe 4 teams have done that. You know, I know Gundy down at the Big 12 Media Days announced Cornelius, the walk-on guy, was going to be a starter. Obviously, we know who the guy at West Virginia is going to be. Kyle Kemp at Iowa State will be the starter there. And the people down at Baylor feel that Brewer is kind of the guy. They just haven't announced it. So really, if you look at the Big 12, you've got 6 teams that still haven't talked about who their starting quarterback is or named it, and there's competition going on there. So with two scrimmages under your hat, and you also have to realize Miles Kendrick, he just got there in the spring. I mean, the kid showed up in the middle of January and moved in like the day of school that it started. So they're getting a chance to see him because in the spring football, those guys all shared reps. So now you're trying to get your reps divvied out among who's going to be there and then where you have them on the depth chart. So I don't think it's a big deal at all. I know everybody wants to talk about it, and you know, and some of that has to do with the fact that the quarterback has been named late in the past under David Beatty. But not having a quarterback or anybody named right now is one of the least things anybody should be worried about, because, I mean, it's pretty common around the league and around the country with schools who have competitions going on right now.
Now, I know there hasn't been any media access to fall camp and that practices have been completely off limits to this point. But I also know that, as always, you've got your sources and some of those people have watched practice. There was a question on the message board someone asked, what do you feel are the top position battles in camp?
Oh, that's a tough question. You know, I would probably say right now, cornerback, not quarterback, but corner, because there's so many bodies in there, and I think there's capable players and newcomers that have come in who are going to challenge the starters. You know, you've got Hassan defense and Shaq Taylor back, who started almost every game last year there. You got Kyle Mayberry. I had a chance to talk to him the other day, and he's got 6 starts, I think it was, he told me. Then you've got Corion Harris and Elijah Jones and Elmore Hempstead. So you've got 6 guys competing for really 4 spots on the 2 deep, and I really think that's going to be a position where there's going to be movement, there's going to be high numbers competing in there. And then from there, I would move to quarterback. You know, I know everybody would probably think quarterback's number one, but in terms of competition and numbers, I think corner is at Kansas right now. And then next, I would say quarterback with Bender and Kendrick. I really believe those guys are the two that have moved to the front. So, you know, the quarterback situation there, that's the one everybody wants to talk about. And after the quarterback, I would probably say wide receiver. You know, you've got 7 of your 8 top returning receivers back on the team. You've added Stephon Robinson for spring football, who's a junior college wide receiver that came in January. He's been getting solid reviews from everybody so far with his speed and what he can do with the football. So you've got, you know, 8 guys, again, fighting for, what, 3 spots, because it depends how they line up, if they go with 3 wide and a tight end, or how they're going to do things. So you've got 8 guys that have all played football, D1 football, or have come in and really turned some heads. So you got 8 guys fighting for 3, you know, 3 spots. The 2 deep's going to be 6, so you're going to have some guys that have played some football who are going to be on the 3rd unit.
One of the things that people have pointed to over the years has just been one of the biggest things that Beatty and his regime have struggled with has been the lack of quality depth. And it looks like what you're talking about is we may be seeing that for the first time.
Well, Randy, I think you're seeing it all around. You know, I know you brought up this question because somebody asked about it on the message board. But the thing is, there's competition at every position. And I don't know if it's because the staff really turned up the screws and went out and find guys, you know, kind of their backs against the wall theme. If they went out and found guys for the first time this offseason who happen to all come in and really compete right now. But, or is it finally that kids in the program who've been in the program for a year or two have, you know, settled into a position where they're competing for a job? But this is by far and away in the Beatty era the most competition that I've seen, and really it's still ongoing, and it's at several positions, because I don't know if there's one position group, and I'm not talking about like linebacker. We all know Joe Dineen's one guy, but the question is going to be who's the other starter. I don't know if there's one position group right now that is totally set in who they know who's going to start.
Okay, you've talked about a lot of the pretty boy skill position kids, with the exception of Joe Dineen, obviously. But let's talk about the big men, the uglies up front. Because that may be the most critical position going into this season, specifically being the Kansas offensive line. There's been a lot of positive talk about it, and some of it has even come from you. Do you think it's realistic that the change could happen over the course of one season, seeing them respond to multiple new starters, multiple people in different spots, but maybe the most critical change, a new offensive line coach in A.J. Ricker?
Yeah, I do. You know, Randy, the biggest thing that you have with an offensive lineman is experience and strength and being in a program. And if you look back over the last few years, and I will probably mess this up or miss guys, but, you know, Larry Hughes and McCauley and Frazier and Tovey, and, you know, there's kids that have literally played offensive line their first year in the program. And when you look around at Kansas State or Iowa State, that just doesn't happen. If there is that one unique lineman that they do put in and he does happen to get a starting spot, he's usually surrounded by a junior or a senior or two seniors or kids who've been in the program that can kind of bring that young kid along. Kansas really hasn't had that. And I think the big thing that you got to look at with this offensive line, it's not just the kids in the program who are possibly improving right now. It's what they've added. And you look at Alex Fontana, who I think is going to be the starting center, barring injury. He was with Tom Herman at Houston. He started, I think, 7 games 2 years ago for that really good Houston team that they had. Dwayne Wallace has been added. He started 9 games for Sonny Dykes at Cal. So he's played Big 12 football. You know, he's lined up against defensive tackles from USC and UCLA and Oregon. He's played solid Power 5 football. Kevin Feeder, who came from Ohio State, you know, he didn't play, but he still made it through 3 years of Urban Meyer's program, which, you know, I've talked to coaches all over the place. I know former coaches from Kansas that have coached at Ohio State for Urban Meyer. It is a difficult program. It is hard. So Kevin Feeder, although he hasn't played and he's battled some injuries, everything I hear, he's healthy now. He's at least understood big-time football. And then you've just taken a couple kids from San Mateo, Oppie Main and Adagio Lapetti, and you've thrown those guys in there. I saw them at practice, and they're easily 320, 330 pounds. So you've added some physical strength, you've added size, you've added experience, and I think all of that mixed in with the current players, and then, you know, we always skip Hakeem Adeniji because he just happens to be that guy that, you know, is solid every year, and you know he's going to lock down left tackle and be that guy. You know, I know he's totally 100% healthy coming off the 2 labrum surgeries. He told me he was back to 100%. So you take all of those factors and move them in, and you got a good feel about the line. The biggest question is how long does it take for A.J. Ricker to take these guys and mold them in as a unit to where they play together?
Okay, John, continuing to focus on the offensive side of the football. Talking about the offensive line, we've talked about the quarterbacks, you've touched on receivers. Looking at all that, as well as all the other factors going on the offensive side of the ball, what do you think are the keys to the Jayhawks having a good season in 2018?
Well, we just came from the offensive line, so I'll start there and say that, you know, that's obviously one key. It's all going to start up front. You know, we can sit here and talk about cliches and what you talk about a team has to be successful. Obviously, the offensive line. I think with Kansas right now, Randy, is they've got to find ways to get people the ball. You know, we sit here and talk about competition. This is the first time that I've looked and seen, you know, Steven Sims, a Quan Hampton, and a Stephon Robinson, you know, smaller guys who are really good in open space and tough kids. And they've added Puka Williams, who, you know, his film doesn't lie. You know, when you watch Puka Williams, you see what he can do on film. When he was the player of the year in New Orleans, and I've talked to several players on defense who've just, they've rant and raved about him and how careful they have to be when they're going after him, and you can't have a false step or a misstep because he'll make you pay. And then I've also heard Dom Williams and Khalil Herbert have both had really good camps. So Kansas has some weapons. The question is now, how do you get them all the football? You know, David Beatty talked in his press conference last week, move the chains. first downs, more touches. If you keep the chains moving, now you can get more guys the ball. So, you know, that's one way. But the other way is probably going to be creatively on offense. Can you do some things, you know, changing scheme, doing, you know, maybe some option, maybe some, you know, jet sweeps, just things to keep defenses on their heels and get those playmakers the ball. And back to the offensive line, you got to protect the quarterback, whether it's going to be, in my opinion, it's either going to be Kendrick or Bender. Both those guys have to be protected. You know, they can't be on the run or throwing off their back foot or on their ass the whole time.
So let's shift our focus here a little bit. With 2 weeks to go until the first game, what are your thoughts on the other side of the football about the defense, and what do you think the strengths are there? What are your biggest concerns about the Kansas defense, too?
The strength of the defense is going to be up front in the front four. I think the defensive line is going to be pretty good. And, you know, when you have a good defensive line, that can mask some of the deficiencies that you might have in a couple of your other spots on defense. And I think two of the guys to keep an eye on are the newcomers, Azur Kamara and Darius Morang out of Arizona Western. You know, I've already been hearing stuff about Kamara, how fast he's come on. And, you know, he's a somebody told me the other day they called him a freak coming off the edge. So, you know, he's somebody that could hopefully give you some replacement snaps for losing Dorrance Armstrong. Then Darius Morang, you know, he's a 6'6", 6'7", 280-pound guy on the inside. You know, I talked to Daniel Wise about him, and he said the kid's been pretty impressive. But and when you talk to the players about Morang, they say he's raw. So, you know, it's not going to be something where the guy's light bulb comes on every play, but he may show flashes of being really good. But those two guys are going to help. And then you've got Daniel Wise and Isi Holani and J.J. Holmes and, you know, Keyshawn Simmons and Cody Cole. I mean, there's some guys with that 290 to 300-some pound body inside to anchor down against those offensive lines in the run game. And I think that front four is going to be pretty good. One of the questions that's going to have to be answered is who's going to play next to Joe Dineen. And I keep hearing things that, you know, at one time Denzel Feaster looked good, and then, you know, Osaz, and then maybe Lonaker's made his move back in to, you know, take that spot back over. So somebody's going to have to step up and provide a solid guy next to Joe Dineen. And then in the secondary, it's going to come back down. We just talked a little bit ago about the cornerbacks, who's going to win corner and how fast, if there are new starters, because there very well could be new starters at cornerback, how fast do they learn the speed of the game in the Big 12 and gain that experience? So, you know, that's kind of where I see the defense right now.
You've thrown out a ton of names just in the last minute and a half. A lot of them are names that are new to a lot of Kansas football fans. I'm going to put you on a spot now. There are a lot of those names and faces that could play a lot the first week of the season against Nicholls State. Keeping it to about just five or six guys, who do you think are the top newcomers to the program?
Well, when you say newcomers, I'll tell you, I'm going to pick out the guys who were not at spring football. So, you know, that I would say Corion Harris, but he was at spring football, so he's out. So I'll start with Alex Fontana from Houston. I think he's going to be a huge addition at center on the offensive line. Dwayne Wallace, we talked about, started at Cal. Puka Williams, I think he would be in that mix of the top five or six. Azur Kamara, we talked about, from Arizona Western. And Darius Morang, what's that, five? And then I would say, hey, I want you to think about this, Randy. These two guys from Arizona Western, Kamara and Morang. Morang hardly even played last year. Now, I heard some injuries may have factored into that. But think about this. Kansas offered four guys last year who played on the front four at Arizona Western. You don't think it was fun being that junior college coach?
Those are some dudes, too. I mean, just the physical size. Like you mentioned earlier, how big they are, how physically imposing, having a freak coming off the edge like Kamara. I mean, when you can turn loose a group of dogs like that, oh, yeah, I'd take that job. That sounds pretty fun.
Yeah. I mean, you know, if you're Clint Bowen, you're looking at Arizona's front four thinking, wow, that might be a Big 12 front four they played with. So I named five, and I'm going to go ahead and take it to six. I'm going to name my sleeper, Brian Lipscomb, who is a transfer from Virginia Military. Last year, he led the Southern Conference in tackles for a loss and sacks, I believe. You know, he's played a lot of football. He's gone through a college program. I know it's not big-time football, but he's played 4 years. He's experienced. He's strong. He's been in a weight program for 4 years. I hear he's doing good things at defensive end, so I'm going to throw him in as my sixth guy.
Kansas fans, like you say, are probably they're running, trying to look those guys up to find out more about them. Let's switch gears to another guy that Kansas fans should be interested in and taking the time to find out about, and that is Bishop Carroll, senior tight end and Kansas commit, Clay Cundiff. You had a chance to talk with Clay. Let's listen to a little bit of that interview that you had with him earlier this week.
Thanks, Randy. Hey, I want to welcome in Clay Cundiff here. He is the highest rated tight end in the state of Kansas by Rivals.com, and he is a committed recruit to the University of Kansas. Clay, how are you doing?
I'm doing good. I'm excited to be here. Thank you.
You know, I want to ask you, this week you guys are back on the field. What's it feel like to get back, get the pads on, and get back on the field with your teammates?
It really feels amazing, and this team we have this year is pretty special, and everybody's bringing energy and everybody's picking each other up, and I feel like we can do some things this year.
Well, I know you guys are the defending state champs, and you know, last couple weeks ago I had a chance to see you at the Friday Night Light camp. What was it like to be back on KU's campus and be around the coaches?
Back in Lawrence is always a good time. I mean, I love being up there. It's my future home, so all the coaches were very, very good to me, and I had a really good time up there, and I was glad I could make it up.
When I posted some of the pictures online, it seemed like you were hanging around with Jaden Russell quite a bit from Aquinas. So I have to ask you, you know, are you talking to him about Kansas? Are you trying to sell him on that?
Yeah, I've been trying to get him on board. I've been nagging him a little bit here and there. I think he's going to decide September 30th, but I don't know. We'll see. I feel like he may. I think it's one of his top ones, so I'm hoping he does.
Well, good deal. It sounds like we need to get Jaden on one of our next podcasts. You know, I want to ask you, Clay, I'm sure you get asked this where you're from. You know, why Kansas? What was it that made you choose the Jayhawks?
The number one thing for me that I chose Kansas for is just having that family atmosphere and having people that will always have you even after football, and like you always have like a home after you leave there, and that's just a huge thing that I was looking for in a school, and Kansas had that right place for me.
Good stuff. Well, Clay, we really appreciate you joining us on this version of the podcast, and I'm sure this won't be the last time, and we look forward to catching up to you, and good luck to the start of the season.
Thank you so much, Mr. Kirby. I appreciate it.
All right, take care.
Thank you, you too.
Now, Clay is a kid that I've gotten to know over the last year or so. Great young man, great family. Was a really nice addition to this recruiting class for the Jayhawks. But things in this class have seemed a little slow. Is that how it's really been, or is that just our perception? And what's your take on the latest developments with Beatty's staff and recruiting for 2019?
Well, you know, Randy, it's never slow. You know, these guys, they make their recruiting calls and change their board and do all those things every day. What I do think has factored in is how many of the players who are on campus right now that have joined the program in the summertime are going to count against next year's numbers. And right now, we don't know that. So I had heard in the spring there was going to be 23 graduating seniors in this class. So if that's true, you're starting off with, let's say, 23 scholarships to give. Let's say 7 or 8 of these guys count toward next year, which, you know, the guys we're talking about that have showed up in the summer, they may very well be worth it. I mean, if these guys all pan out, you know, that's not a bad move at all. But that could take you down to 15 scholarships, okay? And I'm just throwing out numbers here, you know, for conversation's sake. And then you got two commitments. So that takes you to 13. So if that's if those are the numbers you're playing with, you got to be careful, okay? You know, they had Lance Legendre committed, the quarterback out of New Orleans, and then he decommitted. So if you've really got those numbers that are in play, you're being selective. You're not just running out. You're just not taking commitments because in reality, that would be like another staff who has 25 to give, having 13 commitments on their board and knocking it down to 12 available. So I don't think it's as slow as it looks. I just think they're being careful. And I know one thing David Beatty's always talked about, and I've heard other coaches say this. They've got some kids. They know who to target. And they may not, you know, they may not be able to be at Oklahoma or Texas for kids, although they did with Jacoby Lott last year. But they've got to find their type of kid that they're on. And that may be a sleeper or a kid with, you know, three or four middle range Division I offers. And the one thing they want to be careful with is not to alert everybody about that and help that kid get more offers. So I think they've been pretty careful on not taking some commitments or doing their due diligence to make sure that if they do take a kid, that kid wants to be at KU. So I think they've been very selective. I think the key is figuring out how many spots are they're really going to have, because that's something that people need to factor in when they remember recruiting. And the last thing is, recruiting seems slow this summer all around the country. And one of the big reasons is because of the new rules they put in play. And a lot of this comes from the coaches who drive this. And that is, June, you had the first few weeks for everybody to get their camps and go see kids. And then everything went dead. It went dead until the last week of July. The last week of July, everybody ran their camps. They had kids on visits. And then I think it was August 1st, it went dead again. And it's dead the whole week of the whole month of August. So when people talk about recruiting being slow, the new rules have really affected when kids can visit campus, and they have basically shut off almost visits for the entire summer with the new rules that were just recently put in place.
Let me put you on the spot right now. I guess this is again with this one, Kirby. In Vegas, the win total for the season is sitting at 2.5 and started at 3 before moving down in some casinos. No gray area. Do you take the over or the under?
Well, last year I told people, what was it? It was like 2. It was 2 or 1.5. You know, last year when you look down the schedule, you kind of thought maybe the over. A lot of people thought it was a guarantee going the over, and that ended up not working out very well. This year, I do have some confidence, actually, in the over 2.5 right now. You know, I don't know where those wins are. Obviously, you got to hope you get one week one against Nicholls State, who will be an interesting FCS opponent. But I just have a good feel. Again, I'm not talking about a bowl game. I'm not making any predictions. I'm not telling people to start drinking the Kool-Aid or anything. But what I'm saying is I do think there's enough quality bodies and enough competition going on in Kansas. They've got to find a quarterback. There's still some things that need to be answered, but I would take the over. If you're putting me on the spot and saying, hey, I got to pull $100 out of my pocket and I have to go pick one or the other, I would probably go the over on 2.5.
All right, you heard it here first. John Kirby says take the over on Kansas football in Vegas. When you put down that $100, be sure you tell him that, hey, John Kirby said to do this. John, let's wrap it up with a non-football topic. You had a chance to sit down not too long ago with new Kansas athletic director Jeff Long. What did you take from your interview with him, and what are your impressions of the new man in charge in the KUAD?
Well, you know, Randy, I've been doing this for 19 years, and in that time, you get to talk to a lot of people. You get a chance to talk to people who've been at KU and moved elsewhere, and then they introduce you to people, and you know, it's been fun doing what I do, but the one thing is you get a chance to first impressions, and obviously they don't mean everything, but when you sit around Jeff Long, you get the feel and you can just see it. He, you know, he's got that Power 5 aura about him. You know, he's been at Pittsburgh, he's been at Arkansas, now he's at Kansas. He's been through this. He's a former football coach. You know, he was a tight ends coach at Duke. He and I talked about that for a while. He's been in the athletic administration. He worked for Castiglione at Oklahoma. He understands the region around here, kind of, you know, being at Arkansas, being at Oklahoma. And he's just got this feel. You know, this guy wasn't chosen to be the president or the chair of the first college football playoff for no reason. I mean, there are a lot of smart people that wanted him in that position. He's just got this way about him. You know, very pleasant demeanor, very intelligent. But you also see that one side that I don't think I'd want to be on the bad side of him, because I think he's got that very stern, tough way about him that maybe he doesn't show in an interview. You know, I think Jeff Long was probably the best hire that Kansas could have pulled off. I mean, everybody wanted somebody with Power 5 experience, and it may have been tough to attract a quality candidate who's already at a Power 5 school right now. But I think Jeff Long is the closest thing to what they could have ever gotten. And they're incredibly lucky of the timing, the way things worked out, that he was sitting there available to get. Because I think come this fall, if more athletic director positions shake open or open up, I think Jeff Long would have been a target, and he would have not lasted long. We had some great talks, and I've still got some stories coming out about what we talked about. But, you know, he supports David Beatty, and he supports the players and the staff. And I really think if you sat down with him and said you have two choices, you can either have your coach not succeed and you get to go hire your guy, or over here you can have your coach succeed that's in place now and you can keep supporting him and watch him grow and help him, he would definitely, without a doubt, take, I want the current coach to succeed. And you know, something he told me, we joked about this for just, you know, a brief second, that there's a perception out there on message boards and talk shows that new athletic director comes to town, he's got his hatchet out, he's going to start cutting coaches and making changes. And you know, he told me, if you look at his history of where he's been, he's never done that. He's come in, he spent time, he's gotten, you know, he's gotten to know the people, he's given everybody a chance, and that's just not his style. So it'll be interesting to just follow how things go. But I think Kansas got a good one, and it was a good time sitting down with him and getting to know him.
You alluded a little bit to some future stories that could be coming with more of the inside information from the conversations that you had with Jeff Long. What else do you have coming up specifically in the next week or so as we gear up for the first game week of the 2018 season on Jayhawk Slant?
Well, Randy, we have no media access this week, so that's one of the things that I've kind of been planning for. I have interviewed in the last couple days the beat writers from Nicholls State, Central Michigan, Rutgers, so we're going to have breakdowns coming in writing from those guys about what their teams look like in fall camp, some Q&As, and then I'm going to kind of get into the position battle thing. I'm going to have some articles and some takes on where I see things as we get ready to walk. We're getting ready to head into that first week where Beatty's going to release the depth chart, so I'm going to kind of give people my insight on what I see in each position and how I think it's going to shake out.
All right, John, I think that's going to do it. Wrapping up this edition of the Jayhawk Slant podcast, thanks to Shay and to JK for joining us this morning. Letting everybody know, the plan is to have more of the editions of the Slant podcast coming up, especially as we get into the thick of the football season, as well as getting close to men's basketball kicking off and what could be another historic year for Bill Self's squad. Be sure and check the website. Be checking out JayhawkSlant.com for all the latest in team news and recruiting. For the Inside Slant podcast, this is Randy Withers. We'll talk with you again soon.
This has been a podcast from JayhawkSlant.com.